The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member. And we don't mean your Aunt Dolores.
You stink!
The TNT Shop has it all. At TNTRadio.live. Political commentator and investigative journalist. You're with Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, welcome. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. TFI Fridays, TGI Fridays. Thank you for joining us wherever you are in the world. We appreciate your listenership. We are going to run through some huge stories today, earth-shaking, in fact. The tectonic plates of politics have clashed once again, and it all happened yesterday on Thursday. The unspeakable, the unthinkable has happened. A former sitting U.S. president has been indicted, but not by a federal court. No, that would be, impossible. Because they couldn't find any crime to raise to the standard of indictment in the federal court. No. This is local court. This is a district attorney in Manhattan, a Soros-funded district attorney who campaigned and told voters, local DA election there, he said, I'm going to get Trump. And of course, he got elected. And what did he do? He's gone try to get Trump. So we'll talk about that in a minute. It's unbelievable. Trump indicted. Over what? That's the big story, isn't it? That's the big question. Over what? Over what exactly? We'll find out. Well, I'll tell you where this is going in a minute. And we'll hit some bigger headlines later in the first hour. And we'll also, in the second hour, we will be connecting, hopefully. It's going to be a little bit of a tenuous connection. We've got him on the move, on the hoof. Our legal correspondent, Matt Lee, is shuttling between Washington, D.C. and New York to try to get a fix on this Trump story. He's a busy guy. He's covering multiple cases at the moment, but he does have time to give us some inside scoop on the Trump story. We'll connect with Matt Lee in the second hour. Look forward to that. Always entertaining, enlightening, and informative. Now, in terms of global affairs, global events, we thought it prudent to focus on a couple of things I wanted to alert our listeners about. And hello to everybody in the TNT chat room. Hope you guys are doing well. I appreciate your participation yesterday, especially when we're trying to game out all these great brain teasers. You guys have been great. There's some great information, by the way, being posted in the TNT chat room. If you are listening, that's where you want to be hanging out during the show. That's where all the action is. That's where all the brains are. They're in the chat room. Now, on the geopolitical side, we didn't talk about this on Wednesday. We had Freddie Ponton on the show, and Freddie has written a stunning report, which is up at 21stcenturywire.com if you're listening. You want to go check that out. That's in our feature section at 21 Wire. That is by, yes, that's right. That's by Freddie Ponton. And it's a story about this three-way deal. And I just want to touch on this because it's actually quite important. This three-way deal for arms deal, basically, with Ukraine, Macron, Zelensky, and a couple of other stakeholders in the middle there. Now, who's involved in this? Well, the name of the game is, according to the NATO partners, they want to try to get weapons and jets to Zelensky. And they'll do it by hook or crook, however way it goes. The headline is Ukraine's three-way deal, France to buy Mirage jets from the UAE, Greece, and Indonesia for Kiev. You might be asking, well, don't the French make Mirage jets? Why are they buying them from countries that they sold them to before? Good question. So welcome to the wonderful world of arms recycling. That's what NATO has become, and it's a great business. It's a great business if you can get into it. So what is this all about? Mirage 2000 jets, that's a 1980s model. Well, why on earth would the French want to buy 1980s Mirage jets? Why on earth would they want to do that? That's the question. I can't understand why. But anyway, the devil is always in the detail. So apparently they fitted out the United Arab Emirates with these Mirage jets back in the late 80s, early 90s. And it turns out they're going to try to buy them at a reduced price and then give them to Zelensky. And what's Zelensky going to do with them? I'm not sure, because there's no Ukrainian pilots that can fly these jets. It'll take them 2 or 3 years to train. So it's neither here nor there for Ukraine, unless, as Freddie Ponton points out, unless they use French pilots to fly the missions. Aha, here we go. And it just so happens that Reuters has reported earlier this month that Ukrainian pilots are being trained in Arizona, we're told, and U.S. flight simulators. Could be, I'm not sure where, might be in Mesa next to the Boeing headquarters. We're not sure. But nonetheless, so that's there. Ground crew looks like it's being trained as well in other locations. So there's talk of F-16s, Mirages, Tornadoes, other planes, all going in there to form this sort of motley air force for Zelensky. And what exactly, how does this deal structure? This is the big question. Well, as it turns out, the UAE, United Arab Emirates, they're not short of a few quid because of the oil they're pumping out. In fact, they pump out so much oil, they don't know what to do with it. So 40 Mirage jets off of the UAE, giving them to Ukraine. But are they going to actually store them in Ukraine? 40 Mirage jets, old jets. As soon as they arrive, they might get turned to scrap metal by the Russians. They'll just fire some missiles in, and that's the end of that. Unless they go to Poland. So all of these are destined for Poland, apparently. That's the, based on the report, the analysis we have here, 40 Mirage jets from the UAE. And it just so happens that, the UAE actually wanted to upgrade their fleet with 80 Rafale F4s. That's the new jet. They've actually ordered those from France in 2021. Surprise, surprise. Big deal there. Big deal for military gear. They won't be delivered in full till the end of the decade, though. So recycle the old ones, get the new ones. Good business for France. They turn a profit. Very good. And we're told Poland and Slovakia are giving their MiGs, some MiGs, old MiGs probably. Yeah, of course, old MiGs, to Ukraine. And to avoid them becoming scrap metal as well, they will be stored probably in Poland. Amazing. Soviet era MiGs, of course, old ones. And so for Poland, Slovakia, that means they will get new jets from America or Britain or France. Take your pick. You see how this works? This is a game of arms recycling. We figured it out, folks. And thanks to Freddie Ponton, we put two and two together. But more than that, we figured out what the next step is. And it looks like the next step, according, and you have to get your hands on this article because the analysis is excellent. What it looks like here is NATO is going to attempt to create a safe zone or a no-fly zone over western Ukraine. How far that stretches towards Kiev is anyone's guess. Could be all the way up to the Dnieper River, but we're talking about western Ukraine and Lviv. So that will be administered and supplied, that no-fly zone, via Polish bases in Poland. So they're probably not going to store any of these in Ukraine, lest they be hit. So could be some sort of annexation deal. That's probably it. Poland will have to annex Western Ukraine in order to allow NATO that footprint. That's the only way that we can figure out how this is actually going to work. So there it is, folks. That's good reporting by Freddie Ponton, and very pleased to be bringing that to you as well. And we also want to mention on April 11th, and that's not too far in the future, April's right around the corner, that'll be the 4-year anniversary of the arrest and the abduction from the Ecuadorian embassy of journalist and publisher Julian Assange, founder of WikiLeaks. So we're asking our listeners and supporters around the world to join everyone to join together from 4 till 6 p.m. at the U.S. Department of Justice. That's on the corner of 10th and Pennsylvania, Washington, D.C. This is what we're told by the event organizers here, to demand charges be dropped against him. So the Julian Assange Support Network is organizing a demonstration in support of this political prisoner who's being held as a political prisoner in the United Kingdom. And what's happening to Julian is happening to all of us. It's the criminalization of truth. Yes, indeed, the world is watching and the tide is turning. Journalism is not a crime. And it's especially directed there, not just at Joe Biden, but Rishi Sunak, Anthony Albanese in Australia. You need to do more for your compatriots, your countrymen, Julian Assange. You should be treating him like a national treasure, not like something that you want to avoid talking about. So without further ado, anyway, we'll give this a shout in the coming days as well, just to remind people. But that looks like a worthwhile event indeed. So anyway, let's take a break here with TNT Today's News Talk, and we will be right back after these messages.
Survoy Morich on TNT Radio.
A salon in Sydney, Australia is spearheading workshops for hairdressers on how to steer small talk about the weather into conversations about climate change. So, I mean, they're really pushing into every aspect of your life. You can't get a haircut without being subject to climate eugenics. I guess a tip for folks out in Sydney, Australia, just vote with your money. Don't go to salons that spread fake news, right? Climate change. So just don't go there. If they start talking to you about it, just say, I'm out of here. I'm not paying for this. Even if they've cut if they're halfway through your haircut, just leave, go to another barber. Maybe we should start alternatives, salons and barbershops that speak the truth on climate. This is just so crazy, clown world.
For Voye Morich on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Public school is the instituted agency of socialism throughout every community.
The U.S. government has no authority to have any role in education.
We're going to lose our very republic if we don't stop this indoctrination of children in government schools.
What happened to us in China can't happen here.
Have one kind of education and then call it equity.
It's about outcomes. It's about trying to force us all to be equal.
I think we're going to have a race civil war in our hands.
We are exposing kids to pornography as early as kindergarten. Parents just don't know.
No, not anymore. Not anymore. Parents need to wake up. They don't have the interests of your child at heart.
Truth and Lies in American Education at salemnow.com.
Hi, Gemma Simon here from the Newcastle Jets for RAD. Playing any sport means setting the right example. And it's not just about how players focus and behave when they're on the field. It's also about their actions and behaviours off it. That includes things like drink driving, drug driving, and driver distractions. No one can perform properly if they're under the influence or distracted. So make sure you make the right decisions when it comes to getting behind the wheel of a car, and you'll definitely earn respect for it.
A message from RAD.
You're with Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to TNT Today's News Talk. I'm Patrick Henningsen, your host. We're in hour number one of this live broadcast, and we're running through some big stories. We'll talk more about there's been some developments, actually breaking developments on the Julian Assange case, which I think that we're going to have to share with you today. We may cut into that this hour, or if not, we'll hold that over for hour number two. It's quite detailed, and we have now a missing piece of the full story, and it's what people suspected all along, and now we know why he is in prison, basically, and it has to do with the collusion between the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency, the U.S. government, and the British government. This is why. So now we understand why They were trying to prevent him escaping to freedom. And to do that, they also needed to actually charge him with something. So anyway, we'll dig into that a little bit deeper. But in the meantime, let's welcome onto the program Christian. He's our research assistant for the show. He's joining us on the live link right now. How you doing, Christian?
I'm really good. Thank you, Patrick. Good to hear that there's progression on the Julian Assange case. Hopefully now that some things come to light, they can be challenged back in court and we can get this back man where he believes, or where he needs to be, which is free.
Oh, 100%, 100%. And it's earth-shaking. It's earth-shaking. This was a story broken by El País, a Spanish story in the Spanish major daily there. And yeah, just it was the proof that we're looking for, the rest of the story of UC Global, security contractor for the Ecuadorian embassy, was basically recording a meeting with his legal team and managed to send that information off to Washington. And it was basically the plot. They had arranged to get him out of the embassy with the Ecuadorians with the diplomatic passports, onto a diplomatic car through the Eurotunnel and then to freedom in Switzerland or France, where he couldn't be extradited. So, and then from there to wherever, basically. So, I mean, pretty incredible story. And Britain basically acted on that with an arrest warrant. So they acted on the U.S. pressured them. They issued an arrest warrant. And then they waited for a period of time. And then 2 years after this incident here, they broke into the Ecuadorian embassy and abducted him in violation of the territorial sovereignty of the Ecuadorian embassy, considered to be Ecuadorian territory in any city that embassies are. But the British saw fit to just ignore that and do what's called an extraordinary rendition. It's what they did with terrorists, supposedly, during the war on terror. They did it with Assange as well. So that's a boiled down version of this story, Christian.
Wow, so it's an incredible story. Thankfully, that's now some moving pieces. So hopefully now a legal challenge can be mounted and get this man back on the streets. But this week, I've got to say, there's a few stories that have really caught my eye. But one is that, as a side note before I go into those, I spent the last couple of days in Oxford. And Oxford, which is a progressive city, shall we say, with progressive narratives. And they are pushing the 15-minute city agenda quite hard down there. So in my boots on the ground attending a literary festival, as I did, a few of my friends were presenting there. I went around the city and also spoke to people about what their views were on regards to the bollards going in place and what the general feedback is of people who generally are going to have to use this. They call it the sectors. They are the six sectors of the city. And the feedback was rather interesting. Two of the people I spoke to, one said that they are aware of someone who damaged them intentionally because their friend was an Amazon driver and they decided to drive over them because they were just plastic bollards, the kind of ones you find at the side of the street anyway, because they are mapped in that way and they have to follow that particular route. So another guy said to me, they've now replaced a number of those with wooden ones that are filled with cement. So they are still having to therefore go out of the city. And they've one lady I spoke to on public transport, her view was that she understands why they exist, but it's, they now have automatic bollards that go up and down for the bus lanes. And I was surprised that the bus lanes have now been remodified to be electric bikes, electric scooters and so on. And there's bicycles now everywhere, a bit like in Amsterdam. There's now bikes you can now pick up at the side of the road and just travel and basically just drop them off where you want on racks and carry on as you go. That was kind of a new feature they were talking about that was happening there. But Oxford really is, it's certainly a place where there's contention. So one particular person, they were angry about them because he's in a band. His studio is a location that's 400 yards away from his house, but he has to take his drum kit 3 miles out. He has to go back to the ring road, travel up, and then travel back in to go what used to be 400 yards down the road. So he's finding very frustrated. Yet he's a shall we say, a liberally minded person who actually is completely fine with it. It just means that he has to spend more petrol in the meantime until he gets an electric vehicle.
Right. So if he has an electric vehicle, then what, he gets to pass through the magic gate?
I believe so, because that's certainly the way that he was talking to me. He was saying, yeah, basically certain drivers, you can have a pass, you can get an e-pass. And so he clearly appears to be a bit clued up on some things that I wasn't aware of. So it appears that if you have an e-pass, you can pass through these barriers.
Wow. So it's either that or buy a trolley and, you know, take it by trolley. I mean, it's kind of like, I sort of feel, Christian, with this 15-minute cities, is that, you know, now they're saying, oh, it's the combustion engine that's prohibited. But pretty soon they'll even prohibit the electric cars, because they'll make up some story about how they're, you know, an eyesore or somehow, I don't know, they'll do something. And then it'll just be pedestrians, bikes, trolleys, and you know, golf carts. I don't know. I don't know. I just get the feeling that it doesn't end here.
Yeah, so the zero energy zones, those signs were everywhere. 7 till 7, zero energy zone. No vehicles were allowed to enter the city center zone to drop off like packages, to drop off stuff. But what I did see as a bit of an identification of this, there's like a gig business that's kind of started, you know, a bit like the Uber Eats and the Just Eats and so on. So trucks and so people were dropping off parcels. They would drop them off to zones, and then someone would come along in a bit like an Uber Eats truck, and it literally would be a bike with a kind of a sled on the front, and people would put their packages in there, and that person would then drive to the house on a bike. And I saw quite a few of those, like almost like book delivery services and parcel delivery services. So vans could drive up, dedicate your parking space, an Uber driver kind of turns up, put your package in, and then they drive it to the house. As I guess that's the gig economy now. It's not growing up around this system, and I think you might see that spread out a bit more.
Is that what Biden it means when he says good green jobs? Are those the good green jobs?
That might well be one of the good green jobs. Yeah. So you can imagine that's like a double whammy when it comes to postage and packaging though, isn't it? You might have to pay Amazon or another company, and then you got to pay again for the hop to get it to your house.
Ah, I see. Okay. Yes. And so lots of money to be made for certain people. So big cover charge there. Oxford, a giant nightclub, a big green nightclub. You got to pay cover. And what about the enforcement? I have seen what the equivalent of brown shirts. Well, let's call them high-vis shirts now, but not, you know, using the Nazi brown shirt term, I saw them forming like green citizens roadblocks, keeping people from, you know, driving through, and literally standing in front of vehicles, prohibiting people from driving through. And they were ready to, you know, stand in front of a big vehicle because they really believed in the cause. I don't know if they were being paid or if they were just, you know, volunteers. Did you see any of those?
I did see those videos that you're talking about with the high-vis, almost like civilian environmental protection officers, effectively. I didn't see any on my journey down there. I mean, I traveled about 2 miles out of Oxford on public transport, heading out to a place called Summertown. I didn't see any on that particular journey. I came into the city and went out another direction. I didn't see any that way. I did see the bollards in place, but I didn't see anybody enforcing or protecting them. However, even inside the city, there did appear to be like your civilian enforcers who were like people who tag cars and so on for the tickets and stuff. There appeared to be a lot more of those. So it appeared to be that they were willing to tag people and tag cars, anything that was in that zero emission zone, ready to get some money out of them.
Oh, what do they find? They probably find them pretty hefty. Was it a couple hundred quid or?
I suspect so. Yeah, I mean, from my experience in Nottingham, it's like a £50 fine. It's like a £100 fine, but you pay it off early, you get 50 quid on it. So I assume somewhere like Oxford enforcing a zero emission zone are much, much higher.
Wow. So if you pay your fine, your £50 fine, your £100 fine or whatever, and you, you know, you get the couriers come up and take the package from the van and do the whole thing. Does this make the planet cooler? That's the question. That's the idea, isn't it? To change the weather. Does any of, how have they proven that this is going to change the weather? That's the big question.
I would completely believe whatever they're going to do here is so negligible. I mean, the UK as a whole, it's going to be a negligible difference. I can sort of see they have a bit of a vision about it, but it's not going to happen, is it? In reality terms, no. I mean, we send all of our recycling to the likes of Ghana and Ethiopia as it is. I mean, we're not going to make any difference here with just limiting zones in cities, but it is a good cash cow on the way.
So we send our recycling to Ghana in Africa?
We do, yeah. All of our e-waste generally goes to Ghana. I know from the company I work for, I know that they send all their cardboard and plastic waste. Some of that goes to Somalia. Most of the cardboard goes back to China for repackaging. So really, it's just a scam to resend it back into ourselves.
Wow. So we basically offshore our rubbish. So yes. We put it on giant seafaring like tankers and container ships that are driven by fossil fuels, of course, and we send those all around the globe, burning tons of hydrocarbon, possibly burning more with that method than, you know, probably quite a lot of traffic in the UK, I would imagine.
I would believe so too, yeah. Ghana's certainly the place where it goes to the most for all the e-waste. And the process they go through at their end is that, unfortunately, they burn the plastics and the PCBs and the devices, and then they get their metals from it, and then they sell the metals on. But the toxic air because of it is terrible.
Of course, yeah. It's just burn the plastic, yeah, because it's illegal to do that here. But if we put it on a boat and send it to Africa or Indonesia, that's cool. That's fine. Yeah.
That's green energy, that is.
That's green. This is so green, you know, and this is why there's a beautiful English landscape, is because we're able to do these very clever green maneuvers, right? So that's a good job on the climate environmental front. They're so crafty. I can't keep up with these people. They're so far ahead of us. It's like 5D chess. 5D,
it is.
5D green chess. So good Lord. Oh, what are we going to do about these people?
I don't know, but there is another story that heavily links into, just tie into that quite nicely, is there was a report that went out a couple of days ago. It comes out of Ofwat. Ofwat is our UK water service regulator. So we have Ofcom, Ofgem, Ofsted, and various regulatory bodies. Ofwat basically looks over our UK water services. So I saw a story that went live on MSN. The head title is basically they want to be able to charge people for using water and water rationing. That is the kind of headline. So I just kind of went out and I actually reached out to Ofwat and I wanted them to verify what was actually in the report. And they sent me the report. So it kind of highlights that the fear headline is that households could be rationed by water, if they go over a certain limit. And the headline, the story broke down, is that they want to be able to install smart meters. So the government held a number of breakout meetings, shall we say, back in September and November. And as of tomorrow, as of the 1st of April, there will be smart machine rollout across the south of England in order to 1,500 houses are going to be chosen from a surplus number of addresses, and they'll be given a smart meter and their water will be rationed in a way to as a part of a trial to see whether if people are encouraged not to use as much water, could they be incentivized by lowering their bill and therefore more sustainable? So more sustainable goals, changing innovation to support affordability is the government's plan, is the Ofwat's headline for this. And you might recognize these kind of phrases, positive energy and innovative spirit, sustainability and environmental needs. A great complement to the challenges that companies face due to changing innovations. Have you heard those words before? They form the basis not only of the environmental movement that's perhaps at the present time, but also those who wish to regulate our energy process, how we have those systems in place to regulate our energy, our wattage and our usage. This document kind of highlights that they want to roll that out across the water systems in the UK as well.
Wow, you speak beautiful globalese.
Thank you very much. I was about to try.
Christian, your Schwabian accent is very distinctive. And yes, Klaus would approve. Yeah, I do recognize all those words. Hey, here's the question. Is there anything in that report that talks about progressive pricing? You know what I mean? With
that's in there. Indeed it is.
Are you kidding me? Are we psychic? I've not seen this report, but do tell.
Progressive pricing actually is a phrase I did read that was in there. So I picked out some statements from this. I kind of wanted to give a bit of an overview for it. So there's a number of companies who've signed on board, Severn Trent Water, Anglian Water, and so on. But the first company that's going to be rolling out its trials is a company called Affinity Water, and they're based out in the southeast of England. So again, it's 1,500 customers. The pilot scheme is to provide them a cheaper rate of using less water with progressively higher rates for the more water they would use. So there's more than a dozen water companies taking part. It also, in the document, actually, it was quite interesting. There's water companies who they believe that they are being negatively affected by publicity of this trial. So we're kind of waiting to see how the other companies did first.
Wow. Okay. So where are they going to test this pilot? Is Southwest?
The southeast. Affinity Water is going to be the first rollout. There's other companies who are going to come on board, but they kind of want to see how the feedback is taken on first. There's so Thames Water. They were particularly they suggested to Ofwat that they must put a website up and that encourage that the trials are not for higher profits, and communications with other companies must be on board. There must be multi-branded communications because they do not want to be seen as basically a profit-seeking company in the eyes of the public. I quote, South Staffordshire Water, they say that their branding should only be supporting affordability and social tariffs. The changing trials should be used, and their marketing should be water efficiency, high discretionary use, as not to state that this would earn us more money, even though, of course, that's actually how the government is selling it to them, that you can make more money this way. It's really interesting.
Well, you're gonna love this, Christian. Okay, today. You're telling me this report just came out, didn't it, in the UK?
It
right?
came out today, yes.
Today, okay. So today, Emmanuel Macron, the head of the French regime, he announces, get ready for it, Christian, progressive pricing of generalized water. We're going to put in place in early May an instrument, like for energy, a smart meter. An eco watt, they call it, for water in your home, which will make it possible to empower everyone. So this is an empowering new program by the French regime. And see, they've got public water. So this looks like they want to go to privatized. And so the smart meter does, and here's the deal with smart meters. You might already know this, but for those who don't, smart meters on electricity is to basically sell you power real time to synchronize the power supply with the market, the real time spot price, so that allegedly, you know, you can only use the power during off peak hours. Otherwise, you'll get absolutely raped on your rates. So, and this is a way for the power companies, they've calculated this very cleverly, not surprised, that they can, you consume less, but you'll pay more over the year. So you use less, you pay more. And same thing with the water as well. Peak, off-peak supplies, real-time pricing, create a water market. And if you you happen to pay more per year, it will be because you also have used less. So get less, pay more. This is like shrink the size of the portion, charge more. That's what smart meters are all about. Christian, I'm pretty surprised that this has been rolled out on the same day in both England and France. I mean, come on.
That's where we have to talk about. I didn't know about the French one, but also it speaks to the same narrative that this stuff is rolled out in synchronicity across multiple countries. And that's where it looks more suspicious. There is a control mechanism behind driving this in this way. I mean, it's not about helping customers reduce their bills. It's about a top-down power structure to control the environment.
Yeah, that is. It is. And also just to squeeze a little bit more money out of everybody there. The tariffs, they want to raise them. Clearly, they want to raise them. So smart meter for the water. Fantastic. All you need now is a microchip in your hand to activate all this stuff and, you know, send other things back. I guess if you use too much oxygen, maybe that might, you know, might get penalized for that, you know.
You're breathing too much. You're breathing out too much carbon dioxide. We need to reduce that down. You're not allowed to go out and exercise too much. We don't want you adding CO2 to the air, kind of thing.
Correct. Correct. You're such a quick learner, Christian. I'm going to put you forward as a delegate for the World Economic Forum. You're learning very fast, very fast. Yeah, indeed.
Net zero is the way to go.
It's all about net zero. That's right. Zero everything. Zero cars, zero people. If they had it their way, it would probably be, yeah, zero people, zero pets, zero everything. So, oh my gosh, these people are really, really going for it, aren't they? Austerity, that was like a picnic, wasn't it? Austerity, this is a whole another deal. Now, bring in the CBDCs, folks. Let's take a quick break here. I'm with Christian, a research assistant for the show. We're breaking it down, folks, like no one breaks it down here on the Patrick Henningsen Show. This is TNT, Today's News Talk. We'll be right back.
With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Is it time to put transsexuals on FBI lists of potential domestic terrorists? The Colorado Springs shooter identified as non-binary, and the Denver, Aberdeen, and Nashville shooters all identified as trans. Transvestites wearing satanic garb overtook the Kentucky capital of Frankfort today. And in Nashville, there was a transurrection as commie-crat trans activists occupied the state capitol, forcing state troopers to form cordons so that lawmakers could get to the restrooms. Indeed, lawmakers in Nashville on M30 were at far graver risk of physical danger than lawmakers in D.C. on J6. Don't hold your breath for these insurrectionists to ever be brought to justice, however. Just like Code Pink never suffered any penalty for occupying the Capitol in D.C. during the summer of 2020. The left is nothing if not consistent in its application of the double standard, rules for thee, but not for we. This needs to change. America needs to be brought back to the equal justice under law standard. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Tom has been a teacher for over 40 years. One day, I think one of the students had asked the question and he didn't remember the answer. And I also noticed that he was letting his class out earlier than they were supposed to let out. I was really starting to worry.
Levi and I talked about how it would change our lives, but he was there beside me.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
With a compelling perspective on global politics, this is the Patrick Henningsen Show on TNT Radio.
All right, folks. All right. Hey, if you're looking at your calendar and it says Friday, you're in the right place, and this is the right time. This is the Patrick Henningsen Show on TNT, Today's News Talk. Always colorful, always informative, always challenging, and you might even get to have a chuckle once in a while. We were chuckling before the break about some of these Davos plans and schemes. They're forever scheming at the World Economic Forum, and now they have their world leaders in place. Emmanuel Macron synchronized with Rishi Sunak in the UK, both announcing smart meters for waters in the House on the same day, both governments releasing these reports, wanting to sort of action this new plan to, I don't know, I guess you pay for your water. Are they going to create a water market like they did with gas and power, you know, real-time pricing? That's what the smart meter is all about. It's not about saving anything. It's about charging you more for less. You see how that goes. It's just like the supermarket, reduce the portion size, raise the price slightly. And then, of course, that's much more profitable. You pay more, you get less, but hey, That's how it goes. He who has the gold makes the rules, or he who has the fiat paper makes the rules. So there we are. That's the market. We've got Christian, our research assistant, on the line. Christian, well, moving on, what else have you you got for us?
Government made an announcement over here in the UK that, of course, we've had 3 years now of track and trace, well, maybe 2.5 years, but that app is now come to an end. So the 27th of April, 2023, the NHS COVID-19 app is to be closed down, no longer available. So wow. Considering how much money they put into that, to the tune of something, was it 30 million or something?
Billion.
If not, billion. It might have been a B, yeah.
Billion. Billion. Where did the money go? Like, how much does it cost to do an app? 30 billion. Yeah. That was Hancock's big trophy. That was his, he's hanging his legacy on that thing.
What wasn't, my memory might be mistaken, but I'm sure that there was like multiple companies trying to roll out an app early.
Yep.
And then they decided that they wasn't going to go with those. They would actually go with Google and Apple's version because they already had the infrastructure. Otherwise, they'd have to sell it to Google or Apple. And then they eventually went with a different company's one that was produced under the brand of the NHS. I'm sure it was something like that.
Yeah, it was at what you're, so you're talking about the track and trace app, aren't you?
Yeah, because that merged with the COVID app, didn't it? That
was gosh, you don't want to know. You really don't want to know. You don't want to know. Gosh, so. 37 billion was spent on the track and trace NHS track and trace app. Okay. Well, that was fact checked that by Full Fact. I'm so glad Full Fact is there. For anybody out there, Christian, who said it was 37 billion, you've just been fact checked. It was actually 29.5 billion. That's a two-year budget. Shame on everybody who said it was 37 billion of wasted public money. No. They only wasted, Christian, 29.5 billion. That's what was actually spent. Do you know anybody who actually downloaded and used that app?
I know very few, and I didn't myself. But I did notice that I have an Android 12 mobile phone now, and it actually it's pre-installed. Mine came with a clean version of Android, but in the Android settings, there's a COVID-19 notification built into Android now.
Oh, that's interesting. I think iPhone has those as well. I'm not sure, but I think if it did, I probably disabled it. So, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. I don't think for a country the size of Britain, what are we, 60 million? I can't work out where that money would go. It's just an app. So I know there's some data and stuff like that behind it and whatnot, but like that's a lot of money.
Do you think it mainly went to advertising, if that's the case?
Quite a bit did. Probably a lot went to PR, advertising, and marketing. Yes, I would say for this to get the whole population to download it and use it, they probably spent, what do you think? They spent what, 100 million?
That's it, because even advertising doesn't really cost that much. When you think about, say, a Hollywood movie that they go full out on bus advertisements, massive, huge, events and so on, it rarely hits 100 million for a $100 million movie. So, I can't imagine this would have cost anything more than that. But yeah. there's just 29 billion earmark on there.
So I was checking out the UK Parliament, and the committee concluded, this was in March 2021, they said it was, quote, unimaginable, the cost of test and trace, and it failed to deliver its central promise of averting another lockdown. So that's how they sold it. This is just so Hegelian, isn't it? The dialectical trap here, problem, reaction, solution. They control the whole rat's maze, the entrance, the exit. They move the walls around. And so that's how they sold the app. This is going to keep you from getting locked down. Just download it and use it and everything's going to be fine. And of course, that didn't happen, of course. They're going to lock down anyway because they use the variants, variant scariant. You remember? That's how they push that second lockdown.
That's it, because you might have it even though you don't know you have it. The whole premise was sold us to, of course, it's the unimaginable. You might have it, but it doesn't say you have it. It's the zero trackable version of COVID. So you might have it anyway.
I will challenge anybody, Christian. I will challenge anyone to prove to me that this track and trace, test and trace app, NHS app, saved one life. Just one. Saved one life. Prove it scientifically. Prove this app saved one life. Just one. We're not asking for a lot. Just show that, and I will acknowledge that, and you'll get some credit for this massive digital pink elephant.
I do wonder, though, how many businesses are still using that as an operating tool. How many people and how many businesses, how many corporations are still incorporating the COVID-19 app that was required, you know, by law, well, sort of, in order to enter their property and enter their form of business. I mean, I know that a lot of hospitals, a lot of healthcare centers required that as something you had to have in order to go in there. And of course, the coffee shops and all the restaurants did for a while, but no one really ever used it. Not really.
Correct. And so the peak time on this was between May 2020 and January 2021. So what's that? That's 7 months. More than that. That was
About 9 months.
Yeah, about 9 months. So that was the peak usage. And during that time, daily testing capacity for the UK for COVID-19 went from 100,000 tests to daily to 800,000 per day. So imagine that. They managed to get 800,000 tests a day. That was a good deal for them. And so that was going on, and they contacted 2.5 million people with these big phone, you know, they had people working the phones and whatnot who tested positive, telling them to do this, that, and the other with their sort of PCR test or lateral flow test or whatever. What a racket this was. And advised 4.5 million of their associated contacts who got pinged to self-isolate. And that caused the staffing crisis for the NHS, also for the national grid. There are people they couldn't get to work to do the power. You remember the blackouts because they're short staff. You remember all that? So this thing was the biggest disruptor to society and the economy. This thing was a disaster. It's a nuclear bomb they dropped in the middle of all this. Whose bright idea was this, or was this the plan all along? You're right, Christian. It's still there. It's still being used. So apparently they're going to mothball it at the end of the month. That's what we're told here.
That's right. The 27th of April is when that will go offline as an app, or certainly not be available. Again, I found this through a Twitter trend, not because that is the story, but if there is a fact, there's a rejection to this, people still want it. People still want this available. People are still clinging to that control mechanism, that directed life, that lockdown system. The people who are trending this topic are those who still want it in place.
Oh, goodness. They still want it. So
they do.
What's that? Stockholm Syndrome? Is that the correct term?
I guess so. It's hashtag under the title, COVID has not gone away, and COVID has not closed down.
You should reply to that tree, Christian, and add another hashtag, Stockholm Syndrome. So
we'll do that.
It's just this crazy. This is crazy. There's still people that, I kid you not, you probably know them. There's not as many here in the UK. I'm going to give especially the English a lot of credit because you don't see as many people masked here. If you go to the East Coast of America, different story. New York, Boston, East Coast, a lot of people wearing the mask. A lot of people wearing the mask. And they wear the mask with pride. There's absolute dedication to the mask. Not here.
I see people on their own in a car wearing a mask on a regular basis, and I'm just like, what are you doing? Who are you protecting yourself from?
Is that a Midlands thing?
Don't know, but I do see it on a regular basis, and I can't help but scoff at it.
Yeah, I bet up in Scotland there's quite a few, because Nippy Sturgeon had everybody really on the program, didn't she? I mean, she really enforced it really well. Wales, the Welsh weren't really into the lockdown, and then they basically put the hammer on them and they tighten the screws. Westminster says, you guys have got to tighten the screws. They're afraid the Welsh will rebel. You know what I mean? The Welsh, they had, London had to keep Wales on a tight leash. And you remember how Wales didn't lock down, and all of a sudden, they had the most strict lockdown. So I think for Scotland, they weren't going to allow, Westminster was not going to allow them. But guess what? The most lax of the United Kingdom, everyone had vaccine passports, Northern Ireland, Scotland, Wales, but not England. So England ended up, although this is micromanaged out of London, England ended up with the most lax restrictions in the United Kingdom. Why is that, Christian?
You know, I'm not sure. I think Boris Johnson might have been in there. He's going, no, we can't do this. It's impossible. Even though, I guess, like you said there, he was kind of hedging his bets on making these things happen. I think if it was Rishi Sunak in there at that time, I think we might still be under a lockdown at the moment.
I think you're right. I think so. Boris wouldn't be able to handle a full-on rebellion. That would just shatter his legacy, Brexit, all the rest of it. Would have been just eviscerated, literally. And so, yeah, interesting. Interesting. Well, this is all interesting. It's falling apart. They're dismantling the machine, maybe putting it in cold storage until another pandemic can be generated and spun up. So we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, because the technology is certainly going to sit there in the background now, ready to be reactivated at a moment's notice. And certainly there is still a push to make another thing happen, that this technology doesn't go away. And this incredible lockdown that's happened to us over the last 3 or so years is ready to go again.
That's right. Paddy Power is giving odds on the next pandemic. And,
oh, really?
Short odds on bird flu. So that's where we're putting the smart money right now, on bird flu at the moment. But we'll keep an eye on the betting markets. The pandemic betting markets, folks. No, I jest. I'm kidding. They're not giving odds on that. They should, though. Actually, we're going to get Basil Valentine to pressure the bookies to start laying odds on pandemics. How about that? But it's not really a good thing to bet on, because it's so easy to game the system. There's, it's literally, you could make, if they did a betting market on pandemics, you could make out like a bandit if you're in government or public health. You just roll out PCR tests, ramp the cycle count up to 60 or something, if you wanted to create a pandemic anywhere, and then just cash in on the Betfair exchange for the next pandemic. Bill Gates would just make more money than he's making right now.
I think for Bill, it goes beyond money. I think this is his philosophy. This is his driving end of life goal that has to happen. And he wants to be proud of doing it and achieving it.
Yeah. The guardians of the planet. You got it. You got it. You got it in one, Christian. That's exactly what's going on there. So a couple minutes left. What else have you got for us?
So the one thing I kind of have kept as a bit of a back burner, I know we're rolling towards that hour there. So obviously Sandy Hook happened a few years ago, and there was an interesting story that happened. Congress the next day was about to pass a legislation into act that was called the Hearing Protection Act, and it was also part of the Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act, which would have meant that people who had permits for conceal and carry across the United States could have had them in every state and every territory. That vote happened the day after Sandy Hook happened, and thus it was taken off the table. The same thing happened this past week with a Nashville school shooter, regards to an event that happened. We know that there's this trans activist and character individual went into a school, caused a lot of damage to individuals and lives. We're going to be certainly going to be shattered in every different kind of way. However, the next day there was due to be a law being passed on a pro-gun law, shall we say. So the timing is very curious, and that was about the brace rule, as it was called. So when I saw the first news stories coming out, I noticed that there was a particular focus on the AR-15 pistol and the brace, and then that was the one thing that now said you can't do this, you can't go ahead with that. So that vote the next day got cancelled. Another pro-gun law gets taken off the table due to a suspicious coincidence that the day before there was a school shooter that had a massive media presence.
Yeah, you're well spotted. Well spotted. You got an eye for detail there, Christian. You're absolutely correct. And it just so happens the gun used in the Nashville trans terror shooting is the exact same gun that they were deliberating over with that piece of legislation. Have you got a couple minutes on the other side?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Because this trans shooter story is huge. I want to get your input on this as well. Look, let's go top of the hour news headlines. We'll have Christian come back on the other side with us. But in the meantime, stay tuned, folks. This is TNT. Today's News Talk, hour number two, is on the way. Patrick Henningsen, your host. Stick around. We'll be right back.